Yeah, I mean, again, I think the tone of the movie is very unusual, right? Like, it's a comedy, but it's a thriller. So that, I think, gets seeped into everything. So it was really fun to go through each scene and be like, you know, what kind of camera technique or what are we nodding to? You know, the idea that Rita has never had these iconic shots, like the Marlena Dietrich, like, slash over her eye shot, or The Thing, or nodding to Spike Lee, or, you know, when he comes, when Connor comes into the house, it's definitely like the Vertigo, you know, walk. Like, so I think it was just us watching a lot of movies, being like, oh, what kind of things can we pull and put in each little scene that is like a little Easter egg for someone that's paying attention.
Hello, and welcome back to The Director's Cut, brought to you by the Directors Guild of America. In this episode, an overachieving high school senior and his carefree best friend take revenge on their physics teacher in director Maureen Borucho's comedic thriller, The Prank. The film follows Ben and Tanner, two seemingly ordinary high school seniors, but when they both fail a physics test, they decide to exact revenge on their teacher by framing her for the murder of a missing student. In addition to The Prank, Borucho's other directorial credits include the feature film Golden Arm and episodes of the series Grand Crew, Saved by the Bell, Drama Club, and segments from Jimmy Kimmel Live. Following a screening of the film at the DGA Theater in Los Angeles, Borucho spoke with director Lena Khan about filming The Prank. Listen on for their spoiler-filled conversation.
I wanted to express my admiration for something that's like the filmmaker dream right now, which is you achieving across the country theatrical release, not even day and date. So very excited for you. It gives us hope for a movie that is not a superhero movie. So thank you for getting that done. We're going to have a cool conversation. This is a weird, nasty, dark ride. And so I was like, you know, I wanted to get to the heart of something sort of serious before we get into it, which is, when did you realize you had this evil inside of you?
I mean, I guess I've always gravitated toward the like dark comedy or darkness. I think probably I'll blame my mom because she made me watch a lot of Alfred Hitchcock as a kid. So I feel like we watched The Birds together and would stay up late at night, like watching Alfred Hitchcock Presents on Nick at Night. So I feel like I've always loved the kind of like package of like devilishness wrapped in some humor.
I see. Yes, I see it coming out here. And I, you know, it has to, we all directors here know, like, you know, these things have to come from something personal. So what was your point of connection in this crazy revenge movie? What things have you not shared with the DGA?
I mean, I think we've all had teachers that have been tough as nails on us. My teacher was Mrs. Jordan in seventh grade. She hated me. So I feel like I really tapped in. She was one of those teachers that you were like, oh, she was hard on you because she was liked you. I was like, no, she really hated me. She would like pick me out of the classroom. She'd be like, you're too much of a social butterfly. She would like put me up in front of her, like next to her at her desk all the time. So I feel like that's kind of where I was like, oh, we've all had these teachers that, what would I have done in seventh grade? I mean, I probably would have framed her for murder. Probably would have been a lot harder since there's social media now and we didn't have it back then, but that's where I feel like I kind of tapped into it. And I also, with Rita, when I thought about this movie, when I got the script, I was like, oh, she's never gotten to play a villain. So I was like, I'd love to work with her. So I thought maybe if we sent her the script, she would have fun.
Oh, that is, you know, I didn't, do you know what I realized? I had to go back and look at my high school yearbook. I had a fifth grade evil teacher named Mrs. Wheeler, and me and my brother would fear her. And then not only that, I was like, Maureen, I connect with your movie. And not only that, I had a natural science one teacher in ninth grade who used to look at us and go, Lena, if you don't stop talking right now, I will make you bleed out of every orifice in your body.
What? You had a, she, Mrs. Wheeler,
yeah,
real.
Yeah, she would say that. Things were different then. And so I love how are you, because something I was excited about in this movie, because I love when directors go boldly forth in their vision, right, is that it is an exquisite balance of tone, which is especially impressive in a movie that is a genre smash, right? And so, and what I love is that it feels like,
It's grounded enough to keep us invested, but it's one degree heightened to pull us into this sort of cinematic fantasy so that me, you, and all these guys in the audience who had their own evil teacher can feel like, oh yes, what would I do to them? And so can you give us an idea of how did you sort of navigate that blend of tone as we went through this ride?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was, again, really inspired. I mean, I love movies, obviously, that's why we're all directors or ADs or, you know, in this film business. But I feel like I really loved that kind of thriller, like Vertigo, Psycho. And then the same thing, I love like dark comedies like Heathers. So I think it was like, okay, how can we start out as a comedy, but keep that through line that like maybe something else is happening. And so by the end, I hope that you're still on the ride, you know, making sure that you're like, wait, okay, we've kind of checked the boxes all the way along. And I think the biggest thing for me was as we would do the comedy scenes, making sure we would play in the comedy space, but then also, you know, you can also turn it a little bit and it can be devious. And so like that can also be funny. So when we would do scenes, it would sometimes be like, let's pull back on the comedy or let's do more comedy. And then the other big through line, I think, is the score. That was like a big bone of contention as we had a 16 string live orchestra. So yes, that I fought for. and I think that, you know, from the first moment you hear those like strings. And I think that's kind of the through line to be like something else is happening or going to happen to me.
So you use the score to sort of balance out maybe what the perspectives we're seeing on screen.
Yeah. And I think too, with like school, it is kind of scary and teachers are sinister regardless if I hope if you're listening to this, you know, it's spoilers that she is a real murderer. So I feel like, you know, the score does tip it.
What?
The score tips it that she is devious. She's a mean teacher, but then later you're like, then it gets really amped up. You know, we bring in horns and stuff when you realize it. She's really evil.
So I actually need you to educate me because I have a movie where things are getting teased out in this way. But after you've watched a movie for like the ninth time, how do you still make sure that things are getting distributed at a pace that is what you want for kind of the suspense that you're going for, like once you've seen it by the 100th time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when I got the script, I did my pass and it was definitely kind of balancing, you know, grounded moments between the characters so that, you know, by the time they have their fight and you realize he's a liar, I think that's when you feel the shift where you're like, oh, it's not just a funny comedy. There's like, they're having this real emotional fight between the friends. So I feel like it grounds you again until we kind of go more into darkness.
No, that's great. I mean, I've worked with some of your leads. I'd love to hear about working with Rita. Ramona was fantastic on Never Have I Ever. I've worked with her, and she's a spitfire. Give me an idea how you got your actors, where they came from, the ideas, anything on the audition process that might be interesting to share.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think overall what I really like to do in all my movies is usually kind of take people and put them in unexpected like roles. So I think it always is like taking somebody that's really talented in comedy, but then flipping it. So with like Rita, you know, she was always my first choice. Again, when I read the script by Becca and Zach White, which was so fun, I thought, you know, again, Rita's never gotten to play kind of like a, you know, a devilish character. So I thought maybe we could send it to her. And she read it in a weekend and she called me on a Monday and she's like, okay, I want to do the movie, but I have two questions. I want to wear leather pants and I want to smoke a cigarette. And I said, you can 100% do that. So it's not very often that you get your first choice. And I think that was really fun because then it was figuring out what did she want to do? How far did she want to take it? Just so that she could be having fun. And then, you know, her and Keith David together are so much fun. Like they just get to kind of, you know, chew the scene together. And you could tell how much they loved kind of playing adversaries. And with Ramona, so Connor was already attached to the script when I came on. And, you know, he had been in TV shows as a kid. And then Ramona's tape came in. And as soon as Ramona's tape came in, it was clear that it was Ramona. Because she is also so, like, yeah, Never Have Ever. She plays such a different character in this movie. And she's so surprising. I feel like every time she would say something, she'd always say it a little different. Or she put her own spin on it. So she always, like, kind of had me, like, excited for what she was going to say or how she was going to ad-lib. And then kind of with the other characters too, it was like John Kimmel was a friend. He's also an amazing director and he kind of came in and did a favor. Kate Flannery she was in my last movie. My brother Ahmed and Betsy are teachers. They kind of, again, like Ahmed did comedy punch up on the script. So it was just kind of like bringing the kind of crazy circus together, of fun characters.
No, that's amazing. So if we circle back a little, because many people know that post-strike, not as many of us are working as we would like. How did you even get onto this project?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'd have to give credit to Stephen Wolf, the producer. He found me. You know, I had a movie at South By in 2020, Golden Arm, that didn't get to premiere because of the pandemic. So Stephen had seen that I had a movie at South By. I had written this Hollywood op-ed about like not getting your, you know, to getting your glory at South By. And so Stephen had a mutual friend, Rachel Goldenberg, that he produced Valley Girl with her. And so he sent me the script. And so again, it was Becca and Zach White's script that was just so fun and exciting. And I think often, you know, not to be super gendered, but I'm sure you do, we get so many like wedding scripts or girls' weekends. And I was just like, that's just not my vibe. So when I got this, I was like, finally, something dark and funny and like about a murderer.
And certainly I assume it did not hurt that your last movie, even to this day, has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, I mean, so, you know, let's not bury that part. Okay, you get the movie, you're on board, you're in production, everybody knows, okay, this is not the budget of Spider-Man, so inevitably there are limitations.
Yes.
What were the hurdles? What were the war scenes? Give us that picture.
I mean, I think, like, first of all, the movie looks incredible, and Matthew Rudenberg, who is the DP, is a genius. I actually worked with him right before this movie, and Jordy Scheinberg, the costume designer, on a show called Drama Club. Okay. And so I kind of stole them from that show. It was like a kid's show on Nickelodeon. And I remember on that set, every time I would like pitch ideas, Matthew would be like, Maureen, okay, when we do our indie feature, because I was just like wanting to do really fun stuff. And he didn't know that I had an indie feature in the works. So he came on board. And so I think it's basically like working with really talented people like Matthew, Jordy, my production designer, Wendy Samuels, who did my last movie. And then again, like I had a great team. So I think it was just like, how do we use what we can? We shot in Oxnard in a school. And yeah, just kind of figuring out, and we shot it kind of when you still had to do testing and wear masks and shields and all that kind of stuff. And then I feel like the biggest challenge of the movie, you know, and it's cats out of the bag. Reed has already talked about it, but she fell on the movie.
Oh no.
And she injured herself, which she was fine, but she was kind of a crazy thing because we had 12 days with Rita, and when she fell, we hadn't shot in any of the classroom scenes. So we actually had to just wait for her to heal. So if you actually watch the movie, she is not in any scene.
Did you block shoot all of that?
Well, we had shot everything up until the classroom as soon as she kind of had to take a little time to heal.
Okay.
She's not technically in any scene with children in the classroom.
I didn't even notice.
She doesn't notice. She's like, is that me? Like, she can't tell. Because we kind of, in a way, it actually forced us to be more creative with our shots. We only had 2 days left to shoot with her in the classroom. So we ended up shooting out all the kids, using a body double for some pieces. And then when she was healed in 2 weeks, she came back with Connor and we kind of filled in the pieces. But she can't tell. And even I remember when we were scoring it, Darren, the composer, again, who did an incredible job, he couldn't tell. So it was a really difficult challenge. And I remember at the time we were like, we don't know how long it'll take her to heal. Like, how are we, you know, are we going to have to use green screen? John Kimmel recommended maybe we take photos of the classroom and we would have to, you know, reshoot it on the volume. But the school ended up getting like sealed off. Rita healed. She came back and we finished the movie.
Nice. I saw her recently at your thing, and she is full of life, more than people half her age. It is insane.
I mean, she's 92, and I don't believe it.
Yeah. I mean, especially when she does her little jig at the end in the kitchen, I'm like, oh, you still got it.
And she was like, she was literally like jumping over C-stands, sitting on apple boxes off camera for the kids. I had to keep up with her. Like, and she was as excited about... We were doing a flag gag where like a flag, like a shadow was on her face. And she had just come off, you know, West Side Story. And she was like, oh, I love this flag gag. And you're like, this like flag that's just
she's
a shadow.
She's been waiting for decades to do a movie like this. You brought her what she needed. So you, by the way, you're also hiding a little bit about another request she had to do the movie, content wise.
Wait, what? Oh, yes. Rita, she definitely wanted to say and so she got us the R, which is so much fun. So you're like, you have to give it to Rita.
Yes, those are always the conversations you have. You go to the studio and you're like, how many times are we allowed to say this? And then you go back to the actors. But hearing of the things you had to do when you found out that she wasn't available, I mean, even though you guys are rushing, as is always the case, it feels like there's so many like candy shots. There's so many things that I know inevitably comes from, we all know you have a very thorough prep process. So which things of the Maureen prep process that all of TV and film knows do you think were most fruitful in you actually getting to have the stuff you had? I just came off of a movie that had a pretty healthy budget, and even we had to dispense of like half of our stuff. And I was like, did you get everything you wanted? Like, how did you make sure you got that stuff?
I think we did get everything. We actually had one scene that we cut Rita out of, which was really hard, but it kind of tipped something. But I feel like in my prep process, what was fun this time is that the budget didn't allow for it. So I just paid for it myself, but I got a storyboard artist to storyboard and help me with the sequence at the end. And actually in the end, what was so interesting is because Rita had to heal, that storyboard helped us. Because we were like, okay, great. Now we know what shots are in her face and what shots are from her back that we can still shoot.
Oh, amazing. Any other parts of I've seen your binder. What other things you think? After storyboard, what are your next things that were like, oh, and I'm so glad I did this?
I mean, I do really think working with Matthew Rudenberg, he makes a much more detailed shot list than I do. So I think we definitely took each scene and were like, how do we make this fun? Or how do we tip it? Or, you know, when she's in the classroom and threatening Connor, we use like the fisheye lens, and I know Rita hates it, but it's like, that's the first time you're like, something's off with her. So it was really fun to go through each scene and be like, you know, what kind of camera technique, or what are we nodding to? You know, the idea that Rita has never had these iconic shots, like the Marlena Dietrich, like slash over her eye shot, or The Thing, or nodding to Spike Lee, or, you know, when Connor comes into the house, it's definitely like the Vertigo, you know, walk. Like, so I think it was just us watching a lot of movies, being like, oh, what kind of things can we pull and put in each little scene that is like a little Easter egg for someone that's paying attention?
No, that's fantastic. I, you know, there's always the question too, when you have things like, I'm remembering the head being thrown, where you're like, should I get a special effects involved? Do we do like a rope? Make sure we figure out, are we just going to throw the head? Throw the head. How many times did we throw the head?
I think we threw the head like 10 times or maybe more. Cause everyone was like, okay, who has a good football arm? Like, okay, wait, no, I want to try. So we definitely threw it a lot, and that was just us throwing it.
Okay. Cause I was going to say, there's a hood, you know, hoods are inclined. How is that going to stay there? But I'm glad you figured that out.
We only needed one. It only had to work one time.
It just has to work once. It's like getting distribution. So speaking of that, what was the road to distribution like for this movie?
I mean, what was tricky about this movie is, you know, we premiered at South by 2 years ago, which was amazing. But again, what's so great is Stephen Wolf, our producer, like was holding out for theatrical. So, you know, that's, again, I'm really lucky and grateful.
Kudos to him. Yeah.
Day and age to be able to have a movie out in theaters that, yeah, isn't a big blockbuster. That's an indie movie. But again, when you have Rita, it's like you really want to give her the glory that she deserves.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's robbed. We all know that's robbed from us a lot. Something I was remembering is just the perspective that we see when we're going through this movie. Like in all movies that have suspense and actually comedy, so much of it is whose eyes are we seeing it from? Who are we feeling it from? So what kind of choices, what were navigating your choices as you sort of figured out where you would go in that realm in this?
Yeah, I mean, I think like one, a lot of that was first how we shot it. You know, that's worth talking with Matthew and with Wendy, the production designer, and Jordy about, like, you know, the characters themselves. And I think because we were kind of towing the line of like, you want the kids to be like, you know, we hate her. And then you feel bad for her. Then you're like, my gosh, like she's almost crying. And then when it kind of flips and you're like, oh no, she's evil. Like, so I always thought of it as like a weird kind of twisted, like boy who cries wolf. Cause it's like, they are crying wolf, but then they uncover like some real stuff. So I think it started with how we shot it. But then really, I think when we got into the edit, working with my editor, Sarah Reeves, who is another like amazing editor, and our additional editor, Matt Diesel, who I also found on Drama Club, it was pretty much when we go through scenes. And that's why there's a scene with Rita that gets cut, because we're like, oh no, we're in her perspective and like, it's not right. So it was definitely like a balance of like, who's looking, who's watching. And so it was as we shot that, but then making sure when we got to the edit that all made sense as you're kind of going along the story.
Makes sense. Okay. Now, so was it you or your DP that loves lens flares?
I think we both love lens flares.
Did you go to them or did they come to you?
I feel like here's the thing. I think we never manufactured any.
I don't know. Maybe that's not true. But anytime we would find one, we'd be like, oh, there's one naturally. So I think like embracing the moment, which is kind of like comedy.
I loved it. I mean, all filmmakers love lens flares. We don't get to have as many as you. I was like, how did she do that? There are two suns. You're like in Star Wars. So another thing I wanted to explore is there are things that definitely ground us in the real world in this movie, despite kind of that pushed nature. There's kind of like high school social constructs. It's, you know, adolescents who don't think enough about consequences. It's what happens in the digital age. I mean, were all those things part of the original script? Because I know the script has been, you know, some years back. And what, how did you kind of play with, just give us an idea of your relationship with those kind of like bigger thematic ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I came on, you know, I did my pass, and I think one of the big things was, you know, there was a couple things that I, you know, big things that I wanted to change. And originally Rita's character was a home ec teacher, which felt like I didn't want to have her in the domestic sphere. So I was like, how about she's like in STEM or physics, that she's just like an evil genius, you know? Then the other thing was like the two main characters are both boys. And so I was like, hey, we never get to see like platonic best friends. So it was really important that we kind of left it open. So we let boys and girls audition. But again, once Ramona came in, it was like clearly Ramona. And then the same thing, like originally, you know, the teacher, Kate Flannery, wasn't a part of it. I was like, oh, I feel like the cycle has to continue. There has to be some kind of button. And a big other thing was adding the teacher's lounge. Because I did think like what was fun is like the teachers are kind of like the commentary to show that everybody kind of in the school. And the same thing with the newscasters. It was like everybody in this town has had her. So they can kind of be like the peanut gallery, you know, and kind of commenting on everything. And there was a lot of improv, you know, in the teacher's lounge with, you know, with the broadcaster and then, you know, so it was a lot of that.
Okay. Is Rita an improv person?
Yes. I mean, I would say like probably if you asked her, she had the most fun during the teacher's lounge days, because I think we just packed that room with comedians and like, she just kind of got to play and bounce off of them.
Now, did you have to reel her in or in her, did she not need that?
I mean, I feel like when, I don't necessarily like to reel people in, but you know, I think I let them play. I definitely think when Rita and Keith had their first day, they definitely went like, way crazy. And I was like, okay, cool. Let them like, this is like so much fun for them. And then it was like shaping it back and being like, okay, maybe we won't be as angry or we won't show our cards as much. So it was like letting them kind of get it out and have fun and then be like, let's take that energy and hide it a little bit more.
Okay. Okay, great. Yeah. Cause I've noticed sometimes when, especially when you have actors who have the fame that Rita has, you know, as a director, there's a certain amount of, care and respect with how you make sure you get what you need while also honoring her experience. Like, did any of that come up? And sort of like, you are the ultimate diplomat. Everybody in the DJ knows how lovely you are and respectful of everybody. But you know, sometimes you got to be like, I'm the director, but even though you're, how do you navigate those sorts of things? I mean, with Rita or the teenagers?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was listening to people being like, okay. And then being like, well, I see it this way. And like, we might try it that way. But a lot of times it was just me being confident in the story that I wanted to tell and the tone that I wanted to toe. So making sure that, you know, I didn't want it to go too arch. Even though we do have some big moments, I think it was really important to like ground it in reality, ground the comedy in reality, ground the world in reality, so that when you do have the heightened moments, they can just be fun.
So was it sort of like, if people want to go a little too far, you let them do their thing? Like, was it like a one for you, one for me?
I mean, sometimes they would do it and I'd be like, that felt too much, right? And they'd be like, yeah.
Okay.
You know, so sometimes it would be like, oh yeah, like, but that felt like you were being a cartoon, you know? So making sure that like, even, you know, when she says, shut up, you little f***s, I like that it comes after a moment that the kids are being a little bit too extra.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, shut up. You know, like, so I almost feel like it's balancing that throughout the movie with the comedy and the thrill.
Yeah. And I actually wanted to speak a little bit about that very particular thing about having a movie set among this age range. I just came off of some shows and now a movie I'm doing is in college, and there's so much specificity that you have to not be totally just canceled by your audience, whether it's wardrobe, whether it's the type of language you have, whether it's just mannerisms. Now, what was sort of your guiding force in making sure you were on top of all that? At the same time, it's a movie that's not going to get dated which is something people try too hard sometimes. And it's like, well, 2 years later, that's not cool anymore.
Yeah. I mean, what's tricky about the movie, even when I got the script and then when I did the rewrite, then when we came out, we kept being like, social media changes so fast that we're like, oh no, is it going to feel dated in a year? I mean, even watching it now, I'm like, we're still referencing Twitter, even though I feel like everybody doesn't call it X, they call it Twitter. So I think that was like a worry. So
Why did we ever call it X?
Trying to make it evergreen enough to be like, we've all lived in this time period, but then also, trying to be authentic to how young kids are or like how you can really take something and get out of control. John Kimmel, I think, said, he's like, this movie is scary for adults because it shows you what children can do. And then it's scary for children because, you know, there's a killer teacher. So it's like, it's scary for both generations.
No, I can see that. And they did an amazing job. You know, for this sort of movie, everybody knows for actually really any scale of movie, so much of it is like, I need to will certain things into existence. I need to get the actors I want. I need to push through a certain vision that people aren't seeing. I need to get even like marketing things the way I want, whatever it is. Like, what are the things that you felt like, you know, it was really important for you to like fight the marine of it into existence, and you're glad that you did?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the tone of the movie is very unusual, right? Like, it's a comedy, but it's a thriller. So that, I think, gets seeped into everything, like how it's pitched, the poster, the trailer, making sure that, like, you know, I think when we did the trailer, we had one that was like super dark and thrillery or horror. And I was like, oh, there's no levity in this. And then they came back and did a swing that was like all comedy. I'm like, oh no, now it's just like a comedy romp. Like, so I think it was always making sure that whatever you're putting out into the world, like, is closest to the match so that people don't have an expectation that doesn't, you know.
So you stayed very involved during all those elements.
I mean, I think in a small movie like this, you have to, you know, where everybody's like all hands on deck. Like, I'll shout out Romel that's in the movie and here, like, his social media was like so great. And I got to say, like, when you're talking about like people in the cast, like, so I would say that just a little thing about Romel, he was, you know, when he was cast, he wasn't like a build person. And then he was so great in the movie and like so funny and brought so much stuff to it that we're like, he's so much a part of the fabric of the movie. And I would say that's like all the kids in the movie, like all the young kids had so much fun. They added so much flavor like on their own because they were excited and they brought so much like uniqueness to it. So I would say like, he's a great example of somebody that, you know, you have him and you're like, okay, great, let's put him in more stuff. Like, he's so great. Like, and so then he gets like a, you know, a card at the end because it was like, he deserves that. Like, he did so great. And then we're like, oh, we should have hired him for our social media. He's been killing it.
Yeah. It's just staying very in tune and all of it. I wanted to know a little bit, you spoke to a little bit, but I know there's always more in terms of that idea that limitations breed creativity. So kind of what were the limitations that you had that forced you into things where you're like, well, I'm glad we went that way?
I mean, I feel like this whole movie does feel like that, where you're like, okay, we have no time and like, what can we do with the camera? What can we do that like helps us tell that story? And so again, it really was like sitting down in scenes and being like, okay, in this scene, you know, like one of my favorite moments is when they get to school and they're listening, you know, to all the students and how the camera wraps around them. I mean, I think we didn't do coverage on that scene, but Nate, who was our steady cam, is so great. And so he was also a collaborative person. I was like, oh, if we move them this way, I can swing around this way and we can get everything in a 360 and we don't have to do, and we can't do coverage because you'd be cutting out of that. So it was things like that, that were like, and the same thing with like Rita's shot at the end. Those were just like in the classroom, there were some bonus like steady cam shots. We're like, oh, let's just get this. And we put them in. And even the way the movie starts, when Rita was done, I just sat her down and I was like, I don't know what we're going to need at the end. So I sat her down and I just fed her some lines. And when we got to the edit, we're like, movie should start with Rita. The opening shot should be Rita. So we're like, let's go back and go fishing. And so we found some of the stuff that I had fed her where she was like, buckle up. And again, it's like very like all about Eve. So we're like, yo, that's like kind of like this and Dressed to Kill, you know, like the way she's dressed with the gloves and all that kind of stuff was just like nods to movies that I love.
So I have a feeling the people here like movies. So in that last action sequence, that I can tell, you know, you're listing all these influences. There's a bunch in there. Give us a kind of like what was going through your brain and the influences, et cetera, in forming that last action sequence.
I mean, I think like, you know, we obviously had like the Shining shot, you know, I think what was hard is, again, you have somebody who's 92. So you want to make something that feels epic, but also like realistic, and you don't have, you know, you don't have a lot that she can
She moves,
do.
Though. She moves.
Yeah. So I think just like having her with that Love bone her. Saw. Like,
yeah.
So that's what it was. I think it was like, how do we make this short sequence really as epic as we can in a confined space on a low budget? And I feel like, again, that's the way we move our camera. That's the shots that we did. That's the score. And again, also like the real emotion on those kids' face. I think they're terrified. And then again, having a real fun comedy beat in the middle of that.
Right. No, like, did you sort of have any rules that you went off? I know you have some lovely buttons at the ends of scenes, kind of things that became part of your roadmap while you're balancing this comedy and the thrilling.
I think it was a lot of like push-ins, right? Like, so that was a lot of like, oh, this is going to tell us something like at the end.
That there's something else.
Yeah, there's something coming. And again, like a little bit of like, oh, wait, something's off.
Okay. Okay. Now, so did you shoot those? Like, did you cover yourself? Because what I've heard from what you're saying is what you hear from a very confident director, which is, well, we did those sorts of things and I didn't get the conventional coverage to back me up later. You knew that your choice was kind of sound. So when you have all these push-ins and this and that too, like, did you kind of shoot the variety the way you said, like, I picked up things for Rita, or were you sort of like, nah, this is what I'm doing right now. And or this is what I have time for.
I think we didn't do like a lot of cover your butt, but I definitely, while I shoot, think of the edit. Cause you're like, okay, yeah. I want this. And then like, maybe there's one Band-Aid. Like, you know, like, okay, here's one out if this doesn't work, but not covering the whole scene. And again, like, even when we were shooting without Rita, it was like, let's cover it. Like, we reimagined how we would shoot it. And again, it actually ended up being more creative because we're hiding her more until you reveal her face, or, you know, she's not in the scene with Romel at the board. Like, how do you make it seem like it's just part of the mystery? So it didn't, but we didn't shoot any extra stuff because we're like, that's what we have to do.
I love it. You do what you got to do. So what's happening now with you? What do you want to do? What are you excited about? The next steps?
I mean, for the movie?
for you?
Oh. I mean, hopefully the movie will be streaming soon. But again, it's nice to have had the theatrical. I'm writing a new movie with Mary Holland and Betsy Sodaro that Sharon Horgan's company Merman's producing. And it's a horror comedy, but real horror. And it's kind of a nod to The Thing. I jokingly said to Keith, I was like, Keith, there could be a spot in this movie for you. Like, you could answer the question of who survives The Thing. But that's kind of on tap and just like continuing to do episodic TV.
You just came off of Deli Boys. Very exciting.
I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you liking the thriller, et cetera game, or what kind of,
I mean, I really love playing in the genre. So yeah. Like, I want to do a Western and a sci-fi, you know, eventually I'll do
at the same
drama.
Time.
I mean, again, I love a mashup. But I think it is fun to like straddle the tone of two lines. And I do think that that comes from growing up in such a weird, like, Irish Catholic, Indian Pakistani Muslim home where you're like, you never really fit into one. So you take two things that don't go together and make them work.
There we go. Well, this was great. I think it's important to have movies that you can just like sit back and enjoy. And you took us on a great ride and I'm excited to have the conversation with you. Oh, thanks.
Thank you so much, Lena. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to another DGA Q&A. The Director's Cut is available wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share, subscribe, rate, and review. We'd love to hear your feedback, and you can help fellow film buffs find the show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is produced by the Directors Guild of America.